Hello everyone and welcome to West of Centre, the podcast from the Birmingham and West Midlands Fabian Society, brought to you in partnership with the Not Enough Champagne podcast. Unfortunately, my usual partner Corey Hazelhurst can't be with us today, so it's just me interviewing Gurinder Singh Josan CBE, who has just been elected to Labour's NEC. Like everything else these days, this has now been recorded online, so unfortunately the quality of the sound might not be as good as usually is. So my apologies for that, but I hope it's worth listening to you anyway. Morning everyone, my name, as you all know, is Luke John Davies. I'm the chair of Birmingham West Midlands Fabians, and my usual partner in crime, Corey Hazelhurst, can't be with us today, so it's just me on this West of Centre podcast with my guest, Gurinder Singh Josan, who's probably involved in just about everything. I mean, the Seeks for Labour, Hope Not Hate, Socialist Health Association, Police and Crime Commissioner, and I'll let him list the rest, but now, of course, on the NEC. So welcome, Gurinder.
Hi, Luke. Thank you.
If you want to just start off, perhaps for people who are maybe not aware of exactly, you know, what the NEC is and how it fits in, could you tell us a bit about what is the NEC and how would you describe your new role on it?
Okay, so the NEC, the National Executive Committee, is the most senior decision-making body in the Labour Party. It's made up of about 35 to 40 people who are representing different constituencies within the Labour Party. So you've got people on there representing trade union, people representing the front bench. You've obviously got the leader and the deputy leader on there as well. You've got people representing affiliated social societies. You've got members representing PAYN members. Representatives of parliamentary Labour Party, and then you've got myself and eight others who are elected by Labour Party members to represent CLPs and members of the Labour Party and the NEC. So, and its powers essentially are defined in the Labour Party rulebook, and in between conference is the decision-making body of the Labour Party. So, quite an important body. It deals with, as you'd expect, all things in relation to governance. So that'll be things like finance, you know, fundraising, resources, regional offices, the staff we employ, the campaigning resources we produce, putting together campaigns, policy making, not to decide policy, but to ensure that we've got systems in place to be able to enable members to get involved in policy making and for policy to be decided. But also then it deals with disputes and complaints and things like that as well. So quite a wide-ranging role, and it's quite, in terms of the function of the Labour Party, probably it has a very important role within all that. And being new on it, I'm just learning it all myself as well.
So have you had meetings yet, and how has your role played out within those meetings?
We've had two meetings so far, and they've both been special meetings. So they have a timetable of meeting throughout the year, and what it looks like to me is the full NEC meets every other month, and then there's a number of subcommittees as well, which meet regularly as well, and the next timetable meeting is, I believe, it's 19th of May. But since being elected, we've had two special meetings to deal with the terms of reference for the special inquiry that was being set up in respect to the recent leaked document. And it's been interesting because they've obviously not been held in person because of the current coronavirus crisis, but they've been held on Zoom. So I think we're all getting used to new ways of working and the NECs as well in that respect. But I'm quite comfortable using Zoom and technology and stuff, but I'm really looking forward to be able to actually go in person to an NEC meeting. I'm sure that will have its own different vibe.
Yeah, I think we've all suddenly had to become comfortable with Zoom, really, haven't we?
It's, yeah, absolutely.
It's become the state of the human condition, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're an interesting time, actually, in that sense, because it's at times like this, I'm sure there'll be clever people sitting around to actually, you know, working hard and creating the next level of technology that we'll all be using for communication. And they'll be doing that right now as we speak. And, so it'll be interesting to see what comes down the line.
Yeah, this stuff never stands still.
No.
So how would you think that how do you think the NEC fits into Keir Starmer's new plans for the party?
I suppose the NEC will be important for any leader in terms of their plan for the party because of its important role in terms of organisation and running the Labour Party. So any leader would have to have a really good relationship with the NEC. We've had two meetings and the leader and the deputy leader sat through all of them, both lengthy meetings. And I'm sure they've got a lot of things on their agenda that they need to be dealing with. But I suppose that shows you the importance that they put on the NEC as well. Mm. And I think in terms of, you know, Keir Starmer clearly set out to do two things. I think one is about unifying the party, bringing people together. And secondly, it's about re-energising, doing what we need to do to be able to be in a position to win the next general election. In both of those objectives, the NEC will be key. And I think what we've seen so far is, or what I've seen so far, is an NEC which actually is the political element is always there. And I suppose that's one of my observations, is having been involved in governments in a number of different roles in a number of different organisations, the one really big difference I see on the NEC is the actual clear political element to it all as well. Mm. So, you know, you can have an organisation which people sit around the table because they believe that they may have their differences, but actually it's all about running a very efficient organisation to achieve the objective that is set up for. But then within the Labour Party and on the NEC, you obviously have the very clear political dimension as well. And it's keeping for Keir Starmer will be navigating that. And again, no different to any other leader. And that then it's almost like a microcosm of the wider party and the Labour movement. So it's going to be a challenge. But I think, you know, the NEC probably has always been a challenge for leaders. You've almost essentially got different power bases within the party. Mm. And it's about bringing that together for the... And everybody then needs to understand what our joint aim is and focus around that.
So you mentioned the leaked report, and obviously you're talking about the politics there of the NEC. Can you speak to that leaked report and how it's been dealt with?
But the leaked report obviously came about very early on in Keir's leadership, and I think one thing we have seen is the clear leadership from Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner in straight away condemning both the contents but also the actual leak as well. Yeah. But also then calling for an independent inquiry. And having sat on the two meetings, the first meeting where we agreed the terms of reference, so it's essentially one side of April, defining the three key areas that the independent inquiry will be looking at. Yeah. So that's partly about the contents of the report. So, you know, what people are alleged to have said, they'll be looking into that. When it's said or done, and looking into that. And secondly, it's about the whole reason for the report being commissioned and prepared and how it came around in the first place. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, about how it was leaked and why it was leaked, and the consequences of that. So So their way of handling it has been to be really focused on ensuring that we deliver the best outcome in the circumstances we're in for those individuals named, those individuals who are referred to in the report, mm-hmm. but also for the Labour Party and for the wider Labour movement. And the key thing here is, you know, there's a lot of, we know all the problems we've had with in relation to anti-Semitism over the last few years. And the, you know, to retain confidence of the Jewish community in particular, but also now of the wider Bain communities as well, because there's issues in relation to racism and sexism and things like that, which are fair enough. The process you go through for the inquiry, it has to be robust, it has to be transparent, it has to be, and it has to be independent, and it's got to be, you know, done in the right way. So Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner have been really focused on that in their contribution to the NEC. And then, you know, in the second meeting, we approved the panel. They were really keen to ensure that they, you know, there weren't people on there who had a direct link to them, or you know, that they were genuinely independent, that there was some kind of diversity on that panel. But I think overall, I think where we've failed over the last few years, partly it's been on the politics, but a large part of it has also been on process as well. And I think the thing that will give people confidence at the end of all this is having a really independent process that is robust, that is transparent, and that delivers within a reasonable time. And I think if you can do that, then that's the thing that gives people confidence back at the end of it. And it might be that actually not, you know, you might not be happy with what the outcome is. It might not be, you know, what you're expecting, it may not be in terms of how you want it. But the fact that the process has been the right process and it's been done in the right way, that should give people confidence back. And I think that's been really important, and that's the thing that stands out for me in terms of how they've dealt with this so far.
We have seen some conversations on social media and elsewhere from people in the Bain community concerned, or drawing concerns out of that report, perhaps, about a potential hierarchy of racism being created. Can you comment on that at all?
Well, no, racism of any kind in anywhere in society is absolutely wrong. And that's racism of any kind. So whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-black racism, whatever. And we've also seen allegations of sexism, misogyny and stuff. And all these things are absolutely wrong. And for us in the Labour movement, you know, the party of traditionally of equality, these things should be even more wrong within our movement than anywhere else. And I think that shouldn't need to be said, but it should need to be said because we need to keep reinforcing that. We live in a society where racism still exists. You know, we go back to race relations legislation in the 60s and how far we've come. I speak as a Sikh. I speak as somebody who as a devout Sikh, who has the visible identity of a Sikh. And in some respect, you know, the UK is probably one of the best places in the world as a person of colour, as a person of faith, as somebody who's different. But even though, you know, there is a lot of good out there in terms of equality in the UK, we also know that it's not enough as long as there is still discrimination out there. I don't think anybody can assume that the Labour Party would ever be immune to any kind of discrimination within its ranks. But we've got to be robust enough to be able to challenge it, to find it, and to root it out, and also to educate people as well. And you know, there have been examples in relation to anti-Semitism in the last few years where people have said comments or posted things on social media and then actually realise the errors of their way. And I think that's important as well. Mm. But the key thing here now is to allow the independent investigation to do its work, to look at all these things and to come up with a report. You know, we've also got the Equality Human Rights Commission investigating the Labour Party as well. Mm. I'm not sure what the timescale for that is, but we're expecting a report on that at some point in the near to medium future. And we'll need to address that as well. And yeah. The same kind of things apply there. But the other thing with all this is the fight against racism and sexism and all these things is an ongoing fight. And I don't think we'll ever come to a stage where we'll say, actually, racism has been eradicated in the Labour Party or in society generally. Yeah. But these are things that, as a Labour Party, as a Labour movement, we need to be on the front line of be involved in that fully. But the other part of all this, then, is about BAME representation. And that's the other thing that's been talked about a lot as well in the last week or so, a couple of weeks. And I think that is just an important issue. We've just gone through a process. We've elected a BAME NEC rep, and Carol Sewell will be absolutely great in that role. She's got a wealth of experience in BAME organisation representation in Unison, in the trade union movement. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she's going to bring that to the Labour Party and to our structures. But alongside that, I think, you know, we do need to be asking questions about where we are in terms of BAME representation generally and BAME engagement. Mm-hmm. I think what we saw at the last general election is there are some communities which are moving away from the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And in particular, you know, the Indian community, Hindu and Sikh community, are probably more further down that road than some of the other communities.
Yeah.
And some of that's about policy, some of that's about engagement, some of that's about representation. But these things all matter. Yeah. The Democracy Review a couple of years ago talked about and it brought about some changes, but these were structural changes. And you know, they went to conference and stuff, and from what I see, actually not a lot has happened in terms of implementing them or developing them, and it's almost kind of been stuck in a rut. And I think where the NEC need to be now is to look at both those structural changes, where we are with them. But I think there are other things which I'm, yeah. When I stood for, I got elected this year to the NEC. It's the third time I stood, and I look back at sort of the pledges I made when I first stood and when the second time I stood and this time, and from the very first time I've been asking for an equality audit of party staff.
Mm.
We should be doing these kind of things. We should be having, we should know what the diversity of our staff in our head office, in the leader's office, in the general secretary's office, in our regional offices is. We should know that, and we should have action plans in place to address any deficiencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's in terms of race, but also in terms of gender, in terms of LGBTQ, in terms of disability, you know, and all equality strength.
Yeah.
But we should also, you know, this time when I stood, I also called for trade union to be more transparent in terms of, and should be publishing data in terms of data of how much money they're putting behind and of candidates and in the selection processes and during the elections, but also the ethnicity and gender breakdown and etc. of those candidates. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't have that information, we don't have that transparency, then it's very easy to just carry on as you're going. But carry on as you're going is not good enough for an ever-changing community out there, society out there. The electorate is constantly changing. Mm. It's becoming more diverse, and we have to change along with that. And none of these things that I've talked about require conference to pass resolutions and take 2 years to implement and stuff like that. We should be able to call, you know, the NEC or other positions of power in the Labour Party should be able to implement these things quite straightforwardly. Yeah. So that's my concern. That sometimes, and what I see is actually ever since the Democracy Review, FAME engagement has almost been used as a factional football within the Labour Party. Yeah. And I don't think that's good enough. I don't think it serves any of the factions well, but it certainly doesn't serve the FAME community well at all. Yeah. I want to see as an NEC member, what I can do to help to try and address that. And to hopefully influence change on some of those things, which actually I think will deliver more change quicker than the structural changes that we've been talking about under the Democracy Review.
Yeah. I mean, that's clearly a priority of the NEC. But do you think it's the main one? What would you say is the number one priority for the NEC right now?
So the purpose of the Labour Party is defined in Clause 1. It's about making sure that there's a presence in Parliament of elected representatives. And we know that in opposition, great have MPs in opposition, but you don't actually achieve much. Yeah. And we know, whatever people think of Tony Blair, when you look at the roll call of all the achievements of that Labour government, at that time there were massive achievements, things like the national minimum wage. And we know that a Labour government, led by any leader, will be 100 times, 1 million times better than any Tory government.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that is our single most important objective and the reason for the Labour Party for being. Is to put people forward, to develop ideas, to have great candidates, have great campaign, and to get elected and to be empowered to be able to affect change. So I think that has to be our single most important focus. To get to that, you obviously then break that down into lots of other things. Yeah. We've got to, to get elected, you need to create an electoral coalition. So we need to look at where we've lost votes in recent times. We need to look at the reasons why. We need to fix our organisation in that respect.
Yeah.
We need to look at our policies going forward, and that's not so much a role of the NEC, but more of the front bench. But also, we have the National Policy Forum, and all those structures are up in the air at the moment as well. But there are policy making structures that need to be looked at. And all these things need to be fixed so that come 2024, we're ready and we're for that general election, or even if we come before that. So I think that's the single most important priority, but there are lots of things along that route that need to be done.
Yeah. So what then are your thoughts on the future of the party, and where, how would you if you're suddenly declared dictator of the party, how would you make sure that we're in a position to be, to be winning in 2024?
I think part of it is about, as you say, I talk a lot about the broad church Labour Party in every time I stood for the NEC.
Yeah.
And I thought this was really important because, the broad church Labour Party is about. So when I stood first, I was going around and I went to a few different places to speak, GCs and things, and people were asking me, what's your definition of the broad church Labour Party? I came up with a definition, and it was something along the lines of that, broad church Labour Party is one in which a Labour Member of Parliament can vote against the whip hundreds of times, can still be accommodated in party and go on to become leader of the party.
Mm.
Now, essentially, that has been the heritage of the Labour Party from day one. We have accommodated people with a wide cross-section of views who have massive disagreement on policy, on organisation issues, but we've managed to accommodate them, they still had a space within the party. And that has to be the basis of building a wider electoral coalition. if you can't keep people who might have different views, who are members of the party, within the party, and focus on the same ultimate objective, then how do you propose to go out and build your electoral coalition out there? And you know, that definition, I used to say, not as a criticism, but actually a reflection of the heritage that you know, Jeremy Corbyn inherited. We need to build that. We need to come back to that. And you know, the conversations in the NEC are just as important as anywhere else in our party. We need to accept that, you know, there are differences, and there will always be differences in our party. Otherwise, we wouldn't be a political party. But it's how we accommodate that, and how we build on that. I think for me, that has to be a big part of the future we're creating or recreating, is that, and then within that, you know, if a leader is elected, my MP John Speller, and John Speller always used to say to me, look, once elected, there are only good Labour candidates. I went out in 2015, well, God knows how many elections have been out, but certainly for Jeremy Corbyn as well, as leader, is I went out with my socks off to make sure that we had him in number 10 as Prime Minister. And that has to be the approach we have across the party, is that once the leader's been elected, you let them get on with the job. But part of the job is about creating unity across the field. Now, I think it was a difficult call for Jeremy Corbyn to create that unity, because if you had voted against the Labour Whip that many times, and you had been disloyal in that sense, then to demand loyalty yourself is a really difficult thing. And I sit on occasionally on interview panels for the West Midland Regional Labour Party board, local candidate election process. And one of the things you ask about is the party whip and understanding of that. So, you know, you've got to demand loyalty, you've got to show loyalty as well yourself. And not loyalty in the sense of voting along the line all the time, but loyalty to your people. Yeah. And I think that's really important. If we are one Labour movement, we are one Labour party. We need to, that's how you create unity. And I think with Angela Rayner and Keir Starmer, and again, you've got two very different people there. Angela Rayner's role as chair of the party in terms of campaigning and all those kind of things is going to be really key to this. But I think she's got the idea, I think she's got the dynamic, I think she gets it. And I think that's going to be really important going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought of it as like a plane. You know, you've got a left wing and a right wing, and then a huge bunch of people sat in the middle. And I've always had my particular place on that, but you know, we always used to just sort of disagree and then go down the pub and buy each other a pint, and that was, you know, that was how it worked. And I think I completely agree. We need to get back to that.
Absolutely. You know, my CLP, my chair and my secretary are, I wouldn't agree with them on policy issues on very much at all. But the one thing I do agree with them is absolute need to have a really efficiently run organisation, the CLP level, with some fundraising going on, with campaign being organised, and you can have those agreements and you can work together at that level, really, you know, if you have the same objectives in mind. Can be done.
Yeah, and with that in mind, then, what would be your assessment of the first few weeks of Keir Starmer's tenure as leader?
I think he's done really well. I think so the first thing, you know, his shadow cabinet appointments, the front bench appointments, I think were really good. I think he, again, within that, he tried to the whole thing about unity, he tried to bring people in from across the spectrum. And you know, that was never going to be easy. But I'm glad he's done that. And I think, you know, I think that's been a big success. I think we've got some great people on there, some really, you know, and new people as well. And I think that's good. I think his whole approach to the league has been really good in terms of being really clear on his you know, condemnation of it all, but also then putting in place a really robust independent process. So to report quickly, I think that's really important. I think he, certainly from what I see, he's gone out of his way not to be factional in any sense. He's gone out of his way to not just talk about unity, but actually to try and work it as well. And that's not easy in our party with the, you know, the diversity we have, but also with some of the entrenched positions we've ended up in over the last few years. So I think he's had a great start. I think the whole thing around coronavirus is a challenge. But again, you know, I think he's taken absolutely the right approach. You know, this is a national emergency, and you know, he put the Labour Party there has been fully supportive of all the efforts nationally to deal with it and to get to grips with it, but also to be there to be challenging in a constructive way, not opposition for opposition's sake. And I think he's got that right. I think if we weren't in the coronavirus, I think, you know, if we, you know, we haven't seen him up against Boris Johnson yet, not the Prime Minister's questions, but he's done well the two times he's been there. I think, you know, if even with a full house and him up against Boris, I think he'll do really well. And we haven't seen the best of him yet. So, yeah, I think it's been a great start, but you know, obviously there's much more to be done yet. But, and I think once we come out of this coronavirus phase, then and get back to some kind of normality, I think we're going to see even more good stuff from him.
Yes, definitely. You mentioned the shadow cabinet there and his appointments. Who do you think are the new stars in that shadow cabinet that are worth keeping an eye out for?
I'm really pleased, first of all, that he gave positions to Lisa Nandy, Irma, Rebecca Long-Bailey, Rosina Valencourt. God, what a star she was in the campaign. And you know, I'm particularly pleased to see Preet Gill there for a Sikh, a member of the Shadow Cabinet. I think, you know, those other candidates who stood in this leadership election, I think there's some great stuff about them, and we're going to see some really good stuff. I mean, Rachel Reeves is a fantastic appointment. Annalee Dodds as well, in the Shadow Chancellor role. I think, you know, Angela Rayner with her role is going to be really crucial. And then, you know, you've got some new people like, you know, Jonathan Reynolds, Jim McMahon, just picking some of the people. I think he's got it. I think there's so much talent on there now, and there's so many new faces. I think we're gonna have some surprises coming up. But in terms of, you know, some really energetic and good performers, you know, David Lammy, having him in that kind of justice role is an absolutely excellent appointment. Something, you know, he's really passionate about, really talked about for a long time. Yeah, I think there's so many on there. To pick one or two out is really difficult. But I think, you know, the key thing is it's been about trying to keep that unity across the party, but also being really focused on, you know, having good people, clever people, people with talent on there as well. And I think it's excellent.
Yeah, a nice simple one to end then. Do you think Labour can win in 2024?
Yes, I think we can. I mean, we saw at the last election our worst defeat ever. And you know, we all talked about, oh, this is going to be two cycles before we get back into contention and stuff like that. But you know what? You know, a week is a long time in politics. Things can change drastically, very quickly. Mm. But I think in this race for 2024, we're masters of our own destiny more than ever before. Mm. If we understand the challenges facing us, if we get out there in those communities, and look, that ain't going to be easy, yeah. That those Red Wall seats are absolutely crucial to Labour's fortune.
Yeah.
And my worry is that we've lost people who have been generation after generation Labour voters, and they're not going to come back.
Mm.
But I think, so the key thing for me is always is the connection you have with people. I don't think it's always the actual policy itself that makes people decide. I think it's about people having confidence in you as a governing party, as people who are in touch with people and understand their concerns.
Mm.
Yeah? And I think you can do that in a way. So after the referendum, my view was that the EU referendum was actually, you know what, we're not in power, we're not in charge of negotiations, we don't have a majority in Parliament. There's very little we could actually do in relation to the EU, into the whole EU stuff. My view was actually, you know what, we should have stepped back from that, let the government own it, let them take us where they were going to do, which they did anyway.
Mm.
But actually, what we should have done was go out into our heartlands and start a really basic conversation with people to understand their concern. Now, look, immigration is a really important issue, yeah, mm. for a lot of people. And I think we need to be going out there in our communities and having a really frank conversation about immigration. And at the end of it, I'm not saying that we're going to change our policy to appease people on the right of the spectrum in relation to immigration. But what I do think would happen is that the fact that we're having those conversations, even though they might not see the policy that they actually want, they will actually have trust in us as politicians, yeah. as people who are in touch with them and understand their concerns. I think that's the single most important thing. I think we've still got time to do that and get that right. If we do that with all our communities and we've got a really diverse Labour heartlands, then definitely we're in contention for 2024.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you there. And of course, Scotland's the sort of the OG of red walls, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big job of work to be done there as well.
And we've got a great guy, Ian Murray, you know, up there, who's second time now, he's been the only Labour MP left. You know, we need to learn from his experience. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, brilliant. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Gurinder, and for talking us through all that. So that was West of Centre, the podcast of the Birmingham and West Midlands Fabians, in conversation with Gurinder Singh Joseph and CBE, and our apologies again for the sound quality. If you want to hear more from Gurinder, he tweets at @GSJosan, and my Twitter handle is @LJDLabour. The theme tune was Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper, and our thanks to Corey and Steve, the Not Enough Champagne podcast crew, for putting this out on their feed. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe, and see you next time. Bye-bye.